Days are short and lately dreary, spirits diminished, I'm often weary. But then I'm reminded, and it makes me smirky, it might be worse, I could be a turkey. Very, very nice to have you along for the ride on another edition of Spectrum West. Thanks for making time, ladies and gentlemen. Stellar cast this week, including the music of Big Little Lions, and the pair of musicians behind it, Helen Austin and Paul Otten, are on the line. Jim Oliver will share the time he spent talking with Melissa Neeland, who for a few hours this holiday season will become the Snow Queen in the Menominee Theater Guild production that bears that name. Saturday's a day many people look forward to, and it's a big day for the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. It's the 21st annual Christmas Stroll of Homes, whose halls are decked and waiting for your arrival. Organizer John Thorpe is here. And right here is where we begin. Society moves so quickly today that the family dinner often stays on the wish list. But our guest, Dr. Anne Fischel, a psychology professor in the Harvard Medical School, has co-authored a large how-to book designed to give you all the ingredients you need to enjoy family time around the dinner table. It's called Eat, Laugh, Talk, the Family Dinner Playbook. 52 weeks of easy recipes, engaging conversation, and hilarious games. We reached her by phone. I find it amazing that we have become unfamiliar with something that I recall as routine. When I was growing up, it was something every kid in my neighborhood was familiar with. In my case, it was my dad's whistle, which meant dinner time. We'd all scatter to our homes and vow to be back as quickly as possible to resume being kids. Now, we tend to blame the times we live in, but when exactly did professionals like yourself notice that we were losing our touch?
That's a great question. I realized it when I tapped into the scientific literature on the many proven benefits of family dinner, of nutrition, academic success, and the mental health benefits that come from regular family dinners. And when I realized that while most parents realize family dinner is the most reliable time of the day to connect with their kids and have a good time and find out what's going on, only 30 to 40% of families are having dinner tonight. So I became aware of this about 20 years ago and thought, what can I do to make it easier? You know, as a family therapist, I realized kind of humbly that a lot of the things I was trying to do in therapy could be done much more efficiently around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, how to make it a lighter lift, how to make this simple idea an easier one. So I co-founded the Family Dinner Project, and then we wrote this book.
We use the excuse of being overscheduled. I think that's the term that's used. And I, for one, don't consider that a new phenomenon. I and everyone I knew was busy back in the days of my childhood, but we found time, or maybe the proper phrase was made time, for what was a ritual. I understand, though, that we do have more distractions nowadays, but what about the claim of being overscheduled? Is that real?
That's real. We've talked to thousands of families over the last 10 years, and no matter who they are, whether it's a three-generational family or a single parent or family with 10 kids on the East Coast or the West Coast, we really hear the same obstacles that families face over and over again. And top of the list is, we're too busy, we're too scheduled, we can't sync our schedules so that we can all be in the same place for dinner. Or we have picky eaters, or there's too much tension at the table, or gadgets are getting in the way.
How about the sad possibility that we're just not good at it anymore because we don't have the same values we once did? And values, I don't think, can be manufactured or learned in a book.
Yeah, I think that the value of wanting kids to feel they can count on their parents, that they have a time of the day that their parents will listen to them and hear their stories, that it's important to be able to relax together and have fun. Mm-hmm. I think those values have stood the test of time.
Okay.
I think that most parents, in fact, there was a survey done, and 95% of parents said, yes, I would like to have dinner with my kids. So I think that's pretty constant. I think what's changed is how much busier we are, being kind of available 24/7 through technology. The structure of the family has changed, so nobody's at home all day to cook in most homes. And in many homes, parents are working two jobs each to get by. So I think, you know, these are real changes. But I think the intention, the wish to have a sacred time, a set-aside time to be with each other, I think that is the same.
You mentioned structure. I'm curious about couples. Does this book work for them? I'm guessing it might. I mean, more and more are choosing to have families that consist of just you and me.
Absolutely. And it doesn't even have to be kin or blood related. You know, we all eat better when we don't eat alone. And family could be whoever it is that makes you feel like home. Mm. Or whoever your community is. It might be a Tuesday night dinner out with your friends, or a couple who are child-free, or who had kids and they're all out in the world. Family dinner is for them, too.
I bought 3 copies of this book, and I shipped them to my 3 grown kids and their families, and I heard from them immediately. I think they're thankful for all the suggestions, and maybe that's the power of the book. I mean, yes, we're busy, not too busy to sit down with the family, but just maybe too busy to be creative.
Oh, well, thank you for sending them to your kids. That is high praise. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, and the idea is to have this sort of treasure trove of crowdsourced great ideas that families have come up with that are, you know, very creative ways to, they're real life hacks, really, that families have come up with to overcome these obstacles. They're things that no one family might have come up with, but now they're all in one place and you can kind of pick and choose. You know, I'd like to play Would You Rather tonight, or I'm going to try a Rose, Thorn, and Bud, asking everybody around the table to say something positive, something difficult, and something they hope will happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that'll spark a great conversation. And if it doesn't, I'll look further in the book and try something else. So, yeah, I hope your kids find a lot of interesting things in there.
They can't wait to dive into it. I wanted to send it just in time for Thanksgiving. I wanted them to have some fun, and they're already quoting the book in texts, so I think that's kind of cool.
Wow, that's great.
So,
yeah, there's some fun games for the Thanksgiving table or for other large family gatherings.
On the phone with Anne Fischel, PhD, family therapist, clinical psychologist, associate clinical professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School, and someone who just so happens to have the same props as we do, a family and a dinner table. Now, how do you get them to interact? The book is called Eat, Laugh, Talk, The Family Dinner Playbook. How important is cooking to the process? I mean, we all know that ordering out, and especially home delivery, is a rising fad.
Yeah, I mean, the only trouble with ordering out or getting takeout is that it doesn't usually come with the same nutritional benefits.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be higher in sugar and salt and fat, and the portions tend to be bigger, and it tends to be more expensive, too. But the food is sort of the least of it in terms of where the benefits come from. The secret sauce of family dinner is really not in a 3-course meal or organic produce. It's really from what happens once the food gets to the table, and that could be takeout. It's the atmosphere at the table that's really important.
Okay.
You know, is it warm and welcoming, and do kids feel listened to, and does everybody laugh? You know, the other thing about cooking, I would say, on the good side of cooking, is that it's one of the few opportunities we still have to make things with our hands and to use our senses, as you know, as the world has gotten more and more virtual. And so in that way, I sing the praises of cooking and as an opportunity to play and to have kids join in.
Mm-hmm.
With
mm-hmm.
playtime. And a lot of the recipes in the book really encourage kids to join in. There's a recipe for origami dumplings where kids make shapes with wonton wrappers. There's a Raggedy Ann salad that's really fun for kids to make. So I give a shout out to cooking as play, but sometimes it's drudgery and we all need a break, and it's fine to order takeout. That's still a family dinner.
Well, the way I look at it is the cooking process is just an extension of, it's kind of the red carpet to the dinner part. So in other words,
I like that. Yes. You can put music on, you can use it to start talking with your kids. So, absolutely.
I have to tell you that over the weekend, because I had my copy, thank the publishers for sending it to me, and it's going to be a cherished possession of mine, I did make the stroganoff recipe. I don't know what page it was on, but as I leafed through, I said, man, I love stroganoff. Haven't made it in a while. And I made it and loved it, so I'm in. I think there's some stains in the book already, so good for me.
Oh, well, that's how you know a cookbook is well-loved.
Exactly. Let me ask finally, how often should we do this in order for it to make a difference for the families out there?
Well, the research says 5 times a week of mealtime, doesn't have to be dinner. But I would say it's whatever a family can pull off. And okay. if a family can do one great meal or one good enough meal a week, fabulous. It may lead to more. But if a family, knows they can count on a Sunday dinner, that is going to reap benefits. That's going to be a predictable ritual, something that builds memories, creates a sort of an identity as a family. This is what we do. I tell families not to get hung up on the prescription from researchers.
Good.
You start with what you can do and maybe build from there.
The book is called Eat, Laugh, Talk, The Family Dinner Playbook. Dr. Fischel, we appreciate you being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Please keep in touch. I have a feeling there's going to be more good stuff coming out of your office. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Coming up on Spectrum West, the music of Big Little Lions, and Jim Oliver meets the Snow Queen. And next, the stroll of the season. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, offering the mobile app that provides access 24/7 to view balances, pay bills, and more. Available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. More is at charterbank.bank. Support also comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting Splendor of Imagination, featuring poetry by Wynne Herberg, by Wynne Herberg, there you go, and paintings by Cheryl Manwiller and Jan Killian. Well, maybe Wynne writes poetry too. More information is available at artzgallery.org. With 20 years of experience, the Christmas Stroll for the benefit of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra just keeps getting better. And the friends of the symphony, those who do all the work, find new ways to make it that way. John Thorpe is one of the hardest working, but always finds time for one of the best ingredients of the holiday season, visiting old friends. I could come up with a bunch of questions, but you're so good at just running with things, I'm going to ask that you simply list the locations and a brief description of what we're going to find, and then if there are any holes to fill, I'm going to jump in at the end.
Got it.
Why does it seem like this year is a bit special in its diversity? There's some stunning architecture on the tour. Foxmoor Lane is well represented, and over the river and through the woods location, a Metropolitan apartment, and a new business in a historic Altoona location.
Right.
So where do you want to start?
Well, as long as you mentioned that new business and the Altoona location, let's just start there. In recent years, we added in either a new business or an undiscovered business that we think our guests would be interested in knowing about. And this year, we actually have one of each, and they're side by side. New this year, newly opened, is a coffee shop and boulangerie called The Nostalgic Bean in beautiful downtown Altoona. And they have Severine, the French baker, who makes awesome croissants, unlike the ones you get in a grocery store. Mm-hmm. and these wonderful lavender shortbread cookies.
Authentic French guy?
Gal.
Oh, gal. I'm sorry.
Right, right.
Authentic French gal? Let me redo that.
Yes, and it's a wonderful little coffee house there on our stroll, and they put a coupon in our insert. And then next door to them is a long-established business that nobody's ever heard of, Wooden Gear Clocks. I've been aware of it because I have a brother-in-law who's into clocks in a big way, and I did a little internet search one time, and who knew, downtown Altoona, there is this place that makes wooden gear clocks, mostly as kits, and they generally arrive unstained, unfinished, so you can finish them in any color, and they have a number of models. They are launching a new model for this season next weekend. They do have a big store window, but they've never had store hours. They have no retail operation. It's been strictly online. And so for our stroll, they are opening up their front showroom, and they are going to be setting some business hours this holiday season where they will have a shop open so you can walk in. So we have new and undiscovered right next door to each other in downtown Altoona.
Like one of Altoona's best-kept secrets.
Not too far from there on Elko Road. It's just south of Highway 93.
This is the over the river and through the woods.
It is. And this is called Hocken Hill Farm. Among other things, they have been a community-supported agriculture program. What they do as a business is they grow the peppers for Eau Claire's chip magnet salsa. But the family found this antique barn, which was actually owned by the man who founded Cornell University for some reason. They'll have the provenance on that available. But they've moved it to their farm and kind of rebuilt it and reimagined it. And they use it as a family gathering place. There is nothing else like it. It's impossible to describe. And it's very, very rustic, as you'd expect an antique barn to be. But particularly upstairs then, where they have this family gathering space, they have a magnificent table that is right out of Downton Abbey. I mean, we're talking Royal Doulton China, Waterford Crystal. It's real silver. I don't remember if it's Wallace or what the brand is. And they have magnificent decorating. They call it a golden pheasant table because it's centered on a golden pheasant and there's pheasant accents everywhere. All the windows are draped in fresh evergreens. It is just a kind of place you want to stop in and sit down and never leave. It is just magical. And it's unless you see it, you can't believe it, and I can't possibly describe it. And you mentioned that we do have three together on the Foxmoor Lane area. One of those is John and Rachel Potter's house. This is the only time I've ever had a homework assignment for people to do before they go on the stroll. They have a number of furnishings and magnificent, huge artworks, part of essentially a charity to fund an orphanage in China. We're encouraging people to go to the homepage of a place called Furnish Out, furnishout.com.
Okay.
There is a video about this effort. There was a woman, she volunteered at this orphanage, and she just found this huge need. And she got this group of artisans, as they were tearing buildings down, they would save architectural fragments. They would assemble them into furniture. She would ship a boxcar load full of them over here, and she would have a one-day sale, and they would sell out. And she did it, I think, three times and raised $94,000 for this charity. And there's probably at least six or eight pieces of furniture and two enormous paintings in the living room from this effort. So to really enjoy this home, I encourage a little bit of homework in advance, checking out the website, seeing the video.
Furnishout.com. And down the street on Foxmoor?
Yes, we have Mark and Lois Helland. They have a very long driveway, so they call the driveway Lois Lane,
of course.
This is a very interesting home. We all talk about Lowe's Creek, but I'm not sure how many of us have ever been this close to it before. This long driveway leads you deep down into the woods, and they're just on the banks of Lowe's Creek. We have groomed transportation, providing transportation for people who don't think they can walk that quarter-mile driveway. Those are, again, friends of the symphony, volunteers, and supporters. This was kind of a classic 70s ranch home with like a chalet living room with vaulted ceilings. This home has been kind of wildly reimagined by them. It is now a two-story home, but they didn't lose the vaulted ceiling. And it's spacious, it's open, it's airy. It is full of family heirlooms. And then some of their family members are artists, and the bulk of the art collection is artwork made by their relatives.
You're more than halfway done, so let me remind people, John Thorpe is in the studio with us, and our topic is the 21st Annual Friends of the Symphony Christmas Stroll this Saturday, and it's from noon to 5.
Well, still in that Foxmoor area, there's a third home.
Okay.
It's on Meadowbrook. It's probably a quarter mile the other direction from these other two homes.
Okay.
So if you're up for walking, it's a great walk. Again, a spacious family home, active family home with active children. Mrs. Schwartz, Sarah, has won Dancing with the Eau Claire Stars for the Children's Theater twice now. We're talking active family, engaged in the community, lovely spacious home on a beautiful setting. And
you have to have space if you're going to rehearse dancing.
You do.
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, we have the apartment in the International Harvester building down on Banbury Place. It's the, I believe, only residential building down there. And they're on the top floor, so they have all the wood ceilings and the beams that are originally there, and magnificent views, and it's loft living. We don't have a lot of that in this town.
No. You know?
We're not downtown Minneapolis.
And, we see it in movies a lot, but we
see
don't.
See it in movies, right. Yeah. And this is probably the premium loft apartment in Eau Claire, I would say, full of kind of wonderful antiques and things. We did have it on the stroll, I believe, 7 years ago. They have made some changes. They've redone the guest room. But again, if you've never been to one of the apartments in the International Harvester, this is actually probably the best one that you really, really want to see.
And finally.
Yes, one of the, what I call, grand dames of Eau Claire Victorian architecture down there on the corner of Summit and State, the historic William Galloway House. And I have been in town more or less since 1975. Until this year, I'd never set foot on the property. And it is really an amazing home inside. It probably has the best stained glass I've ever seen in Eau Claire in an historic home. It is more spacious and airy than you'd expect from a Victorian. The spaces are more open. There's more windows. There's more light. They have the fireplaces. It does have a period-appropriate looking but brand-new kitchen. Fun and gracious. There is no parking on Oakwood Place where that is located. Our friends of the Symphony and supporters, Eau Claire Ford and Ace Auto Mall, are providing shuttle service from Hibbert Hall parking lot as you would enter from State Street.
This Galloway House sounds as if it would be a place for dancing with the Eau Claire Stars to rehearse.
You know, it would be. They have a third floor ballroom, which is just magnificent, but also very interesting. There's a small room off of the main ballroom. And over the decades, all the owners of the home have signed the ceiling in pencil.
That's since 1889.
Yes, yes. So it's really cool. And again, I don't know how I've never set foot in the house. I've never known the owners. I've never been to an event. This is a complete first for me also, and I was just thrilled to get in there.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why, this year feels special to me.
It is really kind of all over the place.
The gist of this tour is that they are decorated for the holidays.
They're decorated for the holidays. Oh, and the tie into the symphony is most of the homes, if they're spacious enough, have large enough for symphony performers. So we will have players from the symphony performing in the homes. This is a fundraiser. Tickets are $25. They should, by all rights, be tax deductible. But we do leave a little box in there. If you can afford to pay a little bit more, we are keeping our tickets kind of artificially low.
Tickets available at each location, but you also have a central location.
Yes, we always have a host venue. So if you have not pre-purchased your ticket at any of our outlets, you can purchase it at Lake Street United Methodist Church. Also, if in the middle of the stroll you need to use restrooms, you have that. We also have homemade cookies, not store-bought cookies, and coffee and music. So a lot of people like to meet and gather there at some point during the stroll. Maybe you need to start your stroll there because you didn't buy a ticket in advance. That can all happen. But that's our host venue. That does move around from year to year, and we have it at Lake Street United Methodist this year.
It's a wonderful way to enjoy the holidays, get the holidays started, and also donate to the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra.
And speaking of getting the holidays started and donations, what do we do every year?
Well, here.
Oh.
Let me show you.
Oh, he's wearing his Christmas socks. Yes.
That's the pair you gave me last year.
Yes.
They're wonderful.
To kick off the holiday season, I bring Al a pair of holiday socks. Specific.
Well, it has a penguin on it.
They're Christmas colors. They're red and green.
Yes.
But it's penguins, so you probably can wear these throughout the winter.
Well, thank you very much. You better make out the label, though. It has a to and from label on it.
Okay, I can make that up if you really want it.
The 21st annual Friends of the Symphony Christmas Stroll is this Saturday.
We do discourage children under 12.
Yeah.
It is really generally not appropriate for young
there.
Children. The other thing, of course, if you've never been on the stroll before, you do take your shoes off of the front door, put them in a plastic bag, and you'll put your shoes on again as you leave each house. Easy slip-on and slip-off shoes.
Good
life
idea.
Will be easier.
Mm-hmm.
You can save your thigh-high lace-up boots for another day.
Because you may not get to the last location.
30 minutes into your house getting in out of your shoes, that can change things. So it's an easy slip-on, slip-off shoes, and you'll have a great time. This is probably the best entertainment value of the year.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful.
Easy come, easy go. Go at your own pace. Go in any order you want.
Again, it's this Saturday, noon to 5. We'll see you there. John, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Two words that John used that tell the whole story of the Christmas stroll: gracious and spacious. So take part, and your holidays will be off to a great start. See, look, little holiday music in the background. I just wanted to be one of the first radio stations to do that.
Although sleigh, I always thought sleigh ride, you could play that just throughout the winter, couldn't you? Because it's really not a Christmas song. It's a winter song. Huh? Yeah. Well, if you haven't heard Big Little Lions Play and Sing before, don't go anywhere. We'll get that in their story just around the corner on Spectrum West. Last week it was literature. This week it's theater. Both comfortable specialties for the experienced Jim Oliver.
A story by Danish author Hans Christian Andersen is the basis of The Snow Queen, a play that will be presented December the 6th through the 8th and the 13th through the 15th by the Menominee Theater Guild. Joining us by telephone is the performer playing The Snow Queen, Melissa Nieland. Thanks so much for coming on to talk to us.
Of course, my pleasure.
Starting in about 1969, The Snow Queen has been adapted into a two-act musical play, motion pictures, television movies, operas, and other adaptations of the play. So which is the Menominee Theater Guild production patterned after?
I would say that this adaptation is really taken directly from Hans Christian Andersen's story and adapted to be a short version that holds true to the original characteristics of the fairy tale, but is shortened so that younger audience members can get a sense of the whole story, but maybe not task their patience too much. So it's a really great version of the story. It's magical and a little scary and full of love and friendship.
Uh-huh. Talk a little bit about what the play is about without giving everything away, of course.
Sure. There's two young children, Gerda and Kai, who are best friends. At one point, Kai is beckoned away from the loving embrace of his friend to go and stay with the Snow Queen. She beckons him. He gets a piece of this magical mirror stuck in his eye and another in his heart, and that slowly turns him to ice. He's becoming cold like the Snow Queen herself. And the hero's journey really is Gerda coming to save her friend, and the trolls and animals and creatures that she befriends along the way who help her ultimately save her friend.
So you are playing the Snow Queen. So how would you describe the Snow Queen?
Well, I have to be sympathetic to her, even though most people probably would not.
Uh-huh.
She's not human. She has no heart. She's this creature who is made of these elements, and she is obsessed with getting this young man to come and stay with her. She's all alone in her palace, and she talks about that, and she needs other people, other creatures there who aren't just her ice creatures. And there's a depth to it. We don't necessarily know the backstory of why this boy at this time, but we're led to believe that potentially there were previous relationships that led her to believe that this boy should come and stay with her. She entraps him by getting him obsessed with this puzzle, and she does learn in the end that maybe her way was not the best way, but I think she's sympathetic.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She lives in a beautiful ice palace and has magic. I mean, what's not to like?
Well, I suppose so. Well, how large is the cast?
There are, I believe, a few more than 30 people in the cast. So there's adults and children.
I'm always curious when you have a large cast play like that. Is this one where you are able to expand the characters to match the number of people who come to audition, or is that what the play calls for, 30 plus?
Sure, there are just about 30 people in the actual cast list in the script that we were given, and I know there were a number of people who were very interested in auditioning, and John Hansen, our director, was looking to really embrace the community, especially for a play around the holidays. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually not sure if many more people were cast than auditioned, but I know that the talent in our community is so vast that there's definitely quite a treasure trove of people in the show.
She is Melissa Nieland, who is playing the Snow Queen in the Menominee Theater Guild production of The Snow Queen. When we first spoke, I asked you for some biographical information, And you're the executive director of the Dunn County Historical Society, which is nice
yeah.
that you have a day job. And you have a master's degree in education, but you have studied with the Guthrie Theater and have done some professional work in the Twin Cities area. And one thing that struck me was you not only work in theater and film, but you also work with companies that develop performing arts pieces to address social issues.
Yeah, I was very fortunate for a time in Minneapolis to work with the Pillsbury House Theater. They have a company that's called Breaking Ice, and it is just an amazing resource for the community. And one of the things that I was lucky enough to be a part of was this company where we would get together with a diverse group, a small, diverse group of people, and really through improvisation and poetry and theater and music and song bring up difficult issues that happen in everyday life, whether it's compassion fatigue or racism or sexism or all of these different issues that people deal with every day in one way or another. And we would address them very baldly and blatantly. And then after that, after those things were brought up, one of the company members would lead a guided discussion with the audience members to talk about how those things made them feel, if they ever noticed those things happening before. It's a really phenomenal way of using the arts to address and heal and at least bring up things that in some ways people weren't able to talk about otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just one very lucky part of my career. Mm-hmm. I loved working with them.
Oh, that's great. You have directed for the Menominee Theater Guild in the past, and you're going to be directing again.
Yes, I'm going to be directing John Russell's play Black Friday, which is a play that was very, very well loved when John wrote it and had it premiere at the Mabel Tainter. It is a play about when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. It's going to be May 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And it is a piece of theater that you will never forget. You really step back into the world of Ford's theater and are there on the night of the assassination. It's truly a really amazing piece of work and done by a phenomenal local playwright who is really really a treasure to Wisconsin and Dunn County and Menominee in particular. John Russell was really just almost indescribable, just an amazing man.
Do I understand that this is going to be the premiere, so to speak, at the Tainter?
Oh, well, the play itself has been performed before, but it has been quite a while since it's been performed.
Okay.
So we wanted to do this as a way to also memorialize John, who passed away fairly recently within the past couple of years.
Oh, okay. Well, the play we've been talking about is The Snow Queen, and the show is being produced by the Menominee Theater Guild. It'll be December the 6th through the 8th and the 13th through the 15th in the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. For ticket information, you can call 715-231-7529 or go online to MenomineeTheaterGuild.org. We've been talking to Melissa Nealand, who plays the Snow Queen. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking all about the show and being so supportive of local theater. We're really lucky to have the Mabel Tainter and the Menominee Theater Guild.
Thank you, Mr. Jim Oliver, as well. You're listening to Spectrum West on WPR. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process for almost 50 years, with welcoming facilities and personalized service. Details are at MarquardtToyota.com. Here we go again. Another musical act coming to visit and adding even more texture to favorites in my music library.
I'm familiar with the story. I know how it ends. But I pick up the cards, call a bluff, deal around again. Maybe this time is the hand I get what I need. Or I fall again, but either way, you will remember me. And I shout out to the world, here we go again. Here we go again. Here we go again. And I shout out to the world, here we go again. Here we go again. Again and again.
They're called Big Little Lions. Two people, Helen Austin, a Canadian, and Paul Otten, an American. A musical sleepless in Seattle, in that they live over 2,600 miles apart, except their shared passion is writing and producing remarkable pieces of music, like this one, called Here We Go Again. Tonight, Thursday, they're in Alma at the intimate Big River Theater. And they've been on the road a while, but were kind enough to pull over and chat. Called folk pop, which sounds like something frozen on a stick. But if I never understood the combination, thanks to Big Little Lions, I do now, because you do merge the two very nicely. First, thank you for providing another personal favorite source of good music, because I'm now a big fan. And thanks for planning a trip through the Midwest so that we can be in the same room when you play. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi.
There are natural questions, obviously, like where does the name come from and how did two people from places over 2,600 miles apart get together? And I'd really like to know, but you see, my pride is in not asking ordinary questions. It keeps me from doing so. But I should point out that you could, however, simply and briefly offer that information and thus preserve my reputation.
Well, the name comes from, we have no idea, because we can't find the email thread where we decided the name. But the big little bit come from, Paul's like 6 foot civilian and I'm 5 foot nothing. So we look a bit ridiculous together.
So
but we don't know where the lines came from.
How did you guys get together? Were you at a gig somewhere as solo people and you went, hey, we'd work well together? What happened?
We were at a songwriting conference in L.A. Independently, we were working on writing music for film and TV. We were both invited to this convention to be on a panel for people that were having success in that field. So that was 2011, and we just happened to kind of get to know each other over that weekend, long weekend, and then touched base a year later and started working a little bit together, and then it kind of snowballed.
Wow. Yeah, we were only intending to write for TV and film, and it kind of got out of hand when Paul arrived at my house in 2014, and that was it, really.
That's a good story.
And yeah, we still live those thousands of miles apart, but it seems to work.
Wow. So you get together when? Just to record and to tour?
No, we record via the internet.
You do?
Yeah, so Paul does all the production at his place, and I do what I need to do at my place, and we just merge the two, or he merges the two, and we have an album.
You're trying to tell me that you guys are never together in a studio?
No.
Rarely.
Very lovely.
Just before we came out on tour, she cut some vocals in my studio.
But he wasn't allowed in the studio while I was doing it.
I haven't heard two voices meld as well in quite a long time. How do you merge the syncopation so well?
I think at first, obviously, there was a bit of a challenge to get to know each other's voices. But I think it's just over time, you know, you get used to how you can kind of anticipate how the other one's going to phrase something, and you get used to the process.
At the beginning, Paul would start, I'd send him my vocal, and yeah, so you can obviously tell I've got a British accent, so Paul would find himself singing in this British accent to try and match my vocals. And he's like, what am I doing?
Well, you have a really new album. In fact, it was just released last month. It's called Inside Voice. And a quote that I read about the album reads, the album digs deeper than their previous work, taking on topics around mental health, but in a way that leaves the listener feeling optimistic. So let's dig deeper a little bit. I did not know what that reference to mental health meant specifically, but then I found a website that referenced 18 songs that remind people with mental illness that they are not alone, and your song, They Know My Name, is on that list. I've spoken with other groups who dedicate some of their messages to a cause or the cause. Tell me about yours.
Well, this album started with a song that Paul wrote about his dad. I'll let Paul tell you about that.
Well, my dad had dementia. He passed in 2018, and so it was just a year plus my family and I dealing with him, and that song came out of that. And kind of inspired, the rest of the songs that were kind of built around that theme. I mean, there's a few songs on the album that are inspired by him and his situation. And
then I've dealt with various mental health stuff, and so I'm familiar with that. Yeah,
it takes various forms, you know, whether it's dementia or
depression.
Insecurities, depression, or just being an introvert.
It's dealing with how we feel, how we go through life.
On the phone with Big Little Lions, Helen Austin and Paul Otten. They're appearing Thursday evening in the western Wisconsin neck of the woods at the Big River Theater. That's in Alma along the beautiful Mississippi River. We're going to sample some music. We've already done that. The single that you guys have picked out, Here We Go Again. What a great tune, and it has the video on your website. Tell me about that song.
Oh, well, that song is about having tenacity in whichever area you work. I mean, it came from our experience of being musicians in an ever-changing world and the goalposts changing. And sometimes, and, you know, it's like any job, it can be a grind. So it's that, here we go again, keep doing this. But it can apply to anybody that needs some tenacity to keep going in their field.
The ironic thing about that song is the recording process and the many forms that song ended up taking. It kind of goes along with the whole theme of the song because it started off with a whole different version. We reworked it a few times with advice from our publisher.
Okay.
So we stuck it out with that song without dropping it, and it ended up in the version that you hear now.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Then you got the video where you saw all our setup because we obviously were two people, but we sound like five people, hopefully. Yeah, we thought we'd take the opportunity to show actually what we do and all the instruments that we play.
Musicians can do a lot in studios to embellish a sound, but on stage it's often kind of a different ballgame. Now, the fact that you've told me that you do so much of your recording long distance has sort of given this a whole new light, but let's run with it anyway. Your stage configuration is unique, Paul. You're surrounded by instruments and percussion. Helen, you've got a few things to do as well. Did this all make sense right from the beginning, this being a duet?
No.
But sounding...
I could say right away. Yeah, we started working as a studio project together. So I throw a bazillion things on a song. So it was just layer after layer. And it didn't matter. And then when it came to the idea of performing together, it was like, all right, how do we pull this off? So we had other members at first. We kept turning over members. It was hard to find people that could travel that distance and dedicate the time. So... I kind of had the idea of doing this two one-man band kind of things I'd seen before and I'd kind of done before and thought it would be a unique approach and a way to fill out our sound and to kind of represent it accurately from the recordings.
Now, Paul's continuously adding to his feet and hands. He added a new side snare this time just because he was missing a rim shot, so we've got that now.
Yeah, I'm working with doctors at the Cleveland Clinic to add a few limbs as well.
Now, you guys are at the Big River Theater in Alma Thursday night. I feel badly for those who are going to hear the repeat of the show on Friday, because by then you're on your way to some more gigs in Illinois. How often do you swing through the Midwest and Wisconsin specifically?
Well, we know already that we are back next year, next November. We're already planning another tour. So I'm not sure which states we're going to be in, but I'm pretty sure Wisconsin and Minnesota are going to be two of them.
Cool. I love the way you say Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. It's Canton.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Now, your schedule looks like after a Chicago date on Saturday, you're taking some time off for the holiday season. Is that a right interpretation?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then we're back at it again in January, going from Ohio down to New Orleans, How do I say it properly?
New Orleans. Or Nolens.
But yeah, so we're back in the States in January after a break, after Christmas.
I think about people who are smart in bands because I talk to so many of them who, for some reason or another, they find themselves in the southern United States in the winter. I say,
yeah. Yes, that's the way to go.
Is time off really time off, or do you use it to write new stuff? And if not, when do you find time to write?
Well, we're both full-time musicians. We don't have any other jobs. So when Paul's at home, he's producing stuff, other stuff for himself, for other people, and doing our stuff. And when I'm at home, I'm writing, and I do a lot of the administration stuff for Big Little Lions. So we don't really get time off.
When I get back, I turn right around and go back to Chicago for Thanksgiving with family. Christmas and all that kind of stuff is spent with family. I work from home in a home studio, so I can get after projects whenever I want, really.
We get as much time off as anybody that's self-employed has time off.
Yeah.
Okay. Do all of the songs that you guys end up recording, are they in the end collaborations between the two? Somebody mm-hmm. writes the lyrics and somebody writes the music, and then time you switch it off, or how does it go?
Yeah, for the most part, sometimes we'll individually write a full song, like the one Paul wrote about his dad. Obviously, that's very specific and personal to him, and there's other times I'll write a full song. But for the most part, they're collaborations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this album, Inside Voice, I'm almost sad that I waited this long, because I know that there are five previous albums, because it's wonderful. There is so much diversity. What happens with Big Little Lions in 2020? How often do you record new stuff?
Whenever we can, really.
For a while, we did an album a year, and then we had a year off in 2017 with, who knows, there might be another one next year.
Okay. We've written and recorded a few new songs over the past month.
Oh, yeah.
We're always writing, recording, because we've always got our publishers putting our stuff out there to get it onto the TV and film. So,
okay.
And we have the advantage of me working from home and having my own studios. We don't have to book recording time anywhere. Mm-hmm. Things can be done pretty much on the spot when inspiration strikes.
It's a fascinating formula. You guys have it down. I'm amazed to find out that that's how you produce your stuff, because the fascination for me was how tight the stuff is, but you do it long distance, and congratulations on that. Helen Austin, Paul Otten, thanks so much for being with us here on WPR. Drive safely, and please keep us in your loop, will you?
Oh, we absolutely will.
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Lonely blue.
Did you think this would be you? Do you know what day it was when you finally lost your touch? Slipped away. Time has made a great escape. You used to know where laughter was. Just another memory lost. Lonely blue. A shame it is. No one to save you. You've loved and lived. Has it all just gone?
You gotta love that. Big Little Lions. They were talking to us from what they call their sexy red minivan. They appear tonight, Thursday, in Alma, Big River Theater. Hey, let's see what's on stage. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present It's a Wonderful Life, Thursday through Sunday, December the 5th to the 8th, and the 12th to the 15th in the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Plaid Tidings, a special holiday edition of the musical Forever Plaid, will be presented by the Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake, Friday through Sunday, December the 6th through the 8th, and the 13th through the 15th. The Snow Queen will be presented by the Menominee Theater Guild, December 6th through the 8th and the 13th through the 15th, in the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. The Festival Theater will present A Christmas Carol, a live radio play, beginning Friday and continuing weekends through December 22nd in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. Holiday Briefs, Christmas-themed one-acts, will be presented by the River Falls Community Theater Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, December 6th through the 8th, in Junior's Restaurant and Tap House in River Falls. The Maskers of the University of Wisconsin-River Falls will present A Dickens Christmas Carol, a traveling travesty and two tumultuous acts by Charles Landon Smith and Charles Dickens, Tuesday through Saturday, December the 3rd through the 7th, in the Seiss Black Box Theater in the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building at the University. The Shell Lake Arts Center will present Christmas with the Looney Lutheran Saturday, December the 7th, in the Erica Coam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. A Charles Dickens Christmas Carol will be presented Thursday through Sunday, December the 12th to the 15th, and the 19th to the 22nd, by the Stagehands Theater of Spring Valley. And the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater Hudson will present Sinatra Christmas My Way, Fridays and Saturdays, December the 6th through January the 4th. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, sir. Thanks very much. Got some time for some memos here for you. Don't forget the Eau Claire Festival's Hiver, Heaver, Ever, through Sunday anyway. Tickets at PabloCenter.org. Let's see, this Saturday, a Saturday matinee, here we go, has been added to the Elvis Show appearance at the Phipps Center for the Arts. It's at 2 p.m. TheFipps.org is their website. The WPR Politics Podcast records live at the Liney Lodge in Chippewa Falls tonight, Thursday, if you're listening then, 7:30. The 20th Fine Arts and Crafts Fair is Friday and Saturday at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee. Their website, MabelTainter.org. Friday and Saturday, Caradori Pottery in Eau Claire holds its annual holiday show. Friday from 5 to 9, Saturday from 10 to 4, artists Joe Maurer, Alan Service, Laurie Chilifone, and Dan Ingersoll are featured there. Jim was talking about the Sinatra and Company thing. Yeah, I see that a third performance has been added of Sinatra and Company on Monday, December 30th. That's at 7 p.m., okay? Okay. Hey, next week it's a holiday, so they're going to give me the day off, but we'll return on December 5, and the holiday season will be officially underway. Why does it seem like this all sneaks up on us more quickly every year? Thanks, Kate, Dean, and others for efforts behind the scenes. Thank you for being one of many, many reasons that we are thankful. Have a delicious holiday. Keep in touch. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Bye.